Alright, as far as appropriate background, Thomas Lynch was a funeral director for 25 years, and this short essay comes from a collection of essays called Bodies in Motion and at Rest. It was published in 2001. As far as, I think the structure was the most striking thing about the essay to me, more than even the individual sentences, because he seemed to structure them pretty consistently. I thought the story concerned this one point of view towards death that's sort of been hardened by 25 years of experience as a funeral director, which, Thomas Lynch's own experience, but the experience of the narrator as well. And it's challenged by, I think, three different things as the story goes on. There's the crying daughter, Nancy, and then this mathematical perspective that he says George is fond of, that he gets into on page 35. And then this final image of the daughter holding her baby at the graveside of the father. And the first two sort of brush up against him, and the third one is the one that really seems to overcome the voice that's consistent throughout the piece. And so I saw it as divided into three different sections based on those different confrontations. The first is this really dispassionate literary description of just arriving at the house to pick up the body. And there's all these, in this first paragraph, there are all these different groups that he places in the story. There's the police, the EMS team, some ER doctor, and then he brings in this Hours, Matt's and mine, his assistant and him, and there's George. So there's all these sort of groups that are floating around this one event. And it saves in this, and he introduces again the title theme in the second paragraph, your body's in motion and at rest. So it's this sort of comparison of his own living, moving body in this house with a dead body. And that introduces an ambiguity that he really preserves throughout the whole piece. This constant comparison and sort of mixing of description of attributing sort of lifelike attributes to the dead body or lifeless things. And like in this paragraph on 33 that starts, and really, he's describing the body. He says, and really there is nothing out of order, no sign of panic, struggle, or pain, and except for the cardiac blue tinting around his ears, the faint odor of body heat, and a little early rigor in his limbs, which makes the moving of him easier. One had never guessed George wasn't just sleeping this morning. And there's also, and earlier on that page, in the paragraph above, he describes the body as breathless, unfettered, perfectly still, manifestly indifferent to all this hubbub, as if it were living. He's first confronted by a very sharp emotional response with the daughter Nancy, and it doesn't affect the tone of the piece very much. She seems very distant. He says, his heart, Nancy, is what I tell her. It looks like he just slept away. He never felt a thing. These are the well-tested comforts one learns after 25 years of doing these things. And then, on the next page, 34, he says, but Nancy is not asking for particulars. She wants to know why in the much larger, overwhelming question sense. Why we don't just live forever. Why are we all eventually orphaned and heartbroken? And why this morning? Why George Horton? Why, oh, why, oh, why? He doesn't seem to show much reverence in his tone for that perspective. He just sort of puts question after question and never really gives particular weight to either one. He doesn't spend much time with any of them. and never really tries to answer them, either in the story or, I mean, either literally as the character in the story, or sort of in explanatory notes later on. It's very diagnostic, it seems to me, of just, again, a man who is conscious of his role and so accustomed to death that he can just deal with these things in a very disconnected way. And then he introduces this biblical and mathematical sort of system of analysis that he says George is fond of, the dead man. And there's this very long paragraph on 35, and he's embarking on a different task than he has been before. He's just throwing all of these numbers out over and over again, just, it seems to me, for the sake of throwing them out, for the impact that it gives you, or that you get reading it. And there's this one really fantastic sentence. As far as his writing style throughout the piece, it's very consistent in that he'll start off with an idea or sort of a statement and then just keep modifying it with clause after clause. And there's this one that's really quite long. It starts on the bottom of 35. It says, and any given day, par for the course, 6,300 of our fellow citizens, just like George, will get breathless and outstretched and spoken of in the past tense. And again, he's using these descriptions that you would just use to describe a living man. And most will be dressed up the way I dress up George, in his good blue suit, and put him in a casket with Matt Scheffler's help, and assemble the 2 or 3 dozen floral tributes, and 100 or 200 family and friends, and the 60 or 70 cars that will follow in the 15-mile-per-hour procession down through town to Grave 4 of Lot 17 of Section C in Milford Memorial, which will become, in the parlance of our trade, his final resting place, over which a 24x12, and so on and so on. And it seems like in the story, he's surprised when he begins this kind of number adventure. It seems like he's realizing the kind of comfort that it gives and the way it sort of bolsters the way he makes sense of life and death, because there are just these stark numbers that you can just consider and put away once you're done with them, because it seems to already be explained and already categorized. And that's why it seems so easy to pack all of them so densely into just this one paragraph, into just really a few sentences, because the sentences are so long. And the most striking part of the piece is the end, I think. It's quite intentional. This last paragraph, nor can we see clearly now, looking into his daughter Nancy's eyes, the blue morning at the end of this coming May, when she'll stand, upright as any walking wound, holding her newborn at the graveside of the man, her one and only father, for whom her baby will be named. Nor is there any math, or bottom line, or Bible verse that adds or subtracts, or in any way accounts for the moment or the mystery she holds there. So he's just gone on this tangent that's really explaining the power of numbers and the sort of biblical force that he says that they have. And then he finishes by saying that really there's this sort of novel moment that he has, either imagining this woman there with her child or seeing her there, that just makes all of these established ways of considering the event just really unimportant. It seems through everything, or nearly everything until the end, There's very little sense of mystery, only in some questions, and it's always wondering why other people don't understand things the way the author does. And then at the end, he's confronted with a real mystery, and it's, I think, more striking than anything else in the story.
Yeah. What did you learn as a writer?
The power of a very deliberate structure. As I was looking through and trying to get to more elemental things about the senses, there were a few things that struck me as like poetic or really beautiful combinations of words, and I didn't really think that that was the point. It was more in the placement of different images and the way that he would contextualize them and explain and or just not explain them or explain them, place them in the story. Like there's this, when he talks about these details of the body, here he is, assembled on his bed as if nothing had happened, still propped on his left shoulder, his left ear buried in his pillow. Right leg hitched up over the left one, his right hand tucked up under the far pillow his ex-wife used to sleep on. And he talks about this little pearl-handled 22 caliber. There's no attempt really to explain why these things are significant, which I thought was very good. He puts them in, and you encounter them the same way that he would finding the body. It's just these things that color it in just the way that you experience it, but not in any kind of like narrative way, or not as real any explanation for anything.
You have to close.
Okay.
Second, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, 12 minutes. I've never seen something. I think it was probably because of the length. It was so short. And it didn't have an arc that returned to the beginning. I think it went very nicely in terms of starting at some place and ending somewhere very different that seemed to surprise both the author and or both the narrator and the reader.
In a way, hang on just a sec. If you look at this David Plotz